This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Raz. I'm still fever-free and my week of double children at school is over, thankfully, and I've just sent my husband back off to Copenhagen for 2 weeks. So feeling a little bit in control today.
Now, speaking of fever-free, did you see that in the space of a few days, Australia had the youngest COVID death, a man who was 30 and died, and then nobody could work out how this man got it because he lived in this, you know, small town in Queensland. And so dutifully about 2,000 of the local community went and got a tested, and then we started pointing fingers at all these people that obviously hadn't told the truth about where they've been. And today on the news, oops, sorry, didn't die of COVID at all.
False positive.
Just whatever. I don't know if it was a false positive or a let's jump, you know, to a conclusion or what it was. But yes, turns out didn't have COVID. And I kept thinking all day, I've been thinking about those 2,000 people that rushed, you know, that just happened to have a cold or happened to have an ache or sneezed after they woke up. And I thought, oh, this is where we are, Nikki Moffat. This is where we are. This is the extreme of one country that just doesn't have a lot of cases. That's what happens, as opposed to a country that is overwhelmed with cases. Do you know, like they're two such different worlds.
They are two such different worlds. It is quite, it's very weird. And, you know, I was talking last week about the difference between Denmark and Germany, and my husband drove down from Denmark on Friday with two people in the car, and he texted me and he said, is it legal for me to cross into Germany with two people in the car? And I said, actually, no, it's not.
No.
I said, but I just put your masks on and sit sort of on opposite sides of the car and try and keep to yourself when you get to the German border crossing. And then two people in the car that are not in your family, I should clarify.
Yes.
And then they got into Germany.
Those people are both German?
They were, no, one was Belgian and one was German, but they both have residency rights in Germany.
Right.
But they're not in the same family either. If there was two different people from two different families, that's fine. You can have four people from two families in the car. You just can't have three different family groups in proximity at the moment. Anyway, they got into Germany, stopped at a petrol station, and one of the guys walked into the petrol station and was sent straight back out because he wasn't wearing a mask.
Oh.
But of course in Denmark he never has to wear a mask, so it was just a whole sort of one of those cultural experiences about what, and the rates in the countries are kind of the same, but Germany is still doing it, having a different route in terms of trying to prevent new infections. So it was just very interesting that they had this whole experience where they're in the car and then they suddenly worried if they were illegal. And
then they got
through the border.
It's kind of akin to when you're in Qatar as a woman and driving over the Saudi border. All of a sudden you have to cover and you can't drive, although now you can in Saudi, obviously. But like back in the day, yeah, there was this big thing. I remember a girlfriend of mine actually went to Oman on holiday and her husband broke his leg. And the big drama was how was she going to drive that leg, pardon the pun, of the journey because there was a piece of the journey where you drove through Saudi. And here she was with a husband with his leg sticking out the window, broken. Yeah. And how were they going to do it? Needless to say, they did. But that involved a lot of conversation on the old 4 kids, 20 suitcases page back in the day about, does anyone know anyone who's in this place right now who can help this person out? What are they going to do? So, yes, it's amazing how you can be just over the border and the rules are so completely different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Nikki Moffat, we're moving into our four fat questions.
Kirsty, if your child goes to a local school in another country, how do you deal with things in the curriculum that you don't agree with? Now, this question came up this week because of a post in the group about a Dutch kid's news being shown at lunchtime in the classroom in the Netherlands. Mm. And there was a parent who asked a question about, how should I approach this with the school? And there was just such a mixed response about, and I should say that on the kids' news was news about the USA, and there was a blurred out video of the killing of George Floyd, which happened this last week in the world. Mm. And so it was very blurry. Everyone was invited to go and watch the video. And I think the Dutch Kids News website probably had more hits than it's ever had in its life, as everyone from Two Fat Expats went to look at the video.
Yeah.
But there was just such a different cultural reaction to what should I do. Now, the child was 9, just to clarify a little bit more and give a bit more information.
Mm, yeah. Because that makes the big difference, doesn't it? I think it's your – I think when you're parenting very young children, so you're far more conscious about what they're seeing, but also the influence of others upon them. And I mean, the only thing I immediately, when I heard this, thought about being in a going to a playgroup in Libya where the television was on, and the news tends to be a lot more kind of, I guess, in your face would be the word that I'm looking for. Like there was nothing strange about seeing someone who died in a car bomb, and to get graphic pictures of that. And that was what was on the television when these 3-year-olds were all, you know, building blocks on the lounge room floor. So that's very different, because you can say, oh, do you mind if I just turn that off? And, you know, that's okay. But to think, you know, had my child then gone to nursery school and seen the same thing, you know, I probably would have had something to say about that. But I'm also well aware that if you choose a school, you have chosen that school. It comes back to being in a country where you've agreed to move to a country and be part of its culture. And yes, probably when my children were sort of 5 to 10, I would have been more concerned about it. I think once your children get to around 12, you tend to be a little more, for me, a little bit more, oh, okay, well, I guess if everybody's seeing it and everybody's having a discussion about it and it's all being handled that way, well, then let's roll with it and we can have a discussion about it at home. I'm gathering that in this case, it was the case that it was the mother American, Nikki?
The mother was American, and she didn't want the clip to be shown without a discussion in the classroom.
Right.
And some more nuances being presented in terms of, yes, this may be related to racism, and yes, this happens in America, but also racism exists in other countries. Mm. She felt that it was part of a bigger conversation.
Right.
And
she felt that conversation wasn't had?
Yeah. Well, she said she felt that it was just shown and there was no conversation about it. And and other people presented some relevant points too, saying that, you know, when news is shown about other countries and your child is from another country, perhaps the country the news is being shown about, kids can just say, oh, bad things happen in your country, and then the kids feel a little bit victimized by that, because, you know, smaller kids, as you say, don't have as many filters or as many ways to process that information. But as you say, I totally agree with it, because I totally agree with the fact that when you go to another country, you know, and you choose to put your kids in a school, even if you don't choose, even if that's the only school your kids have to go to, you have to come up with a plan about how to deal with that stuff, because, and this might be the first thing something like this has come, first time something like this has come up, but if you're, you know, and I talked about it with a friend here who's a teacher, also is American, has taught in international schools in the UK, teaches in a local school here. And she said, well, it's, to me, there's two different things. There's what is taught and then how it's taught. So, and then she said, we have to think about how we deal with that in our house. So what is taught? So if my child comes home and says, this has been taught to me, and she gave me the example of English. Because you see it a lot of countries where there's native English speakers going to local schools and they're being taught English, the parents have often an issue with the way the English is being taught because it's not necessarily being taught the way that you would learn it in another country. Obviously the words, but the yes. grammar and bits and pieces. And so she yes, says she yes. teaches her children, it's important to show the teacher you know what you've learned at school so you can answer the questions in the test the way that the teacher has taught you. But then it's important to know that that's not how it really is. And so we'll practice the right way at home. So, yeah, so I guess it's all well and good and easy for us to talk about this and you know, in a measured tone, and it hasn't infected our children recently. And then I thought about, you know, what are the hills I have died on when my children went to local schools. And to be fair, my son was not – they went to a religious school in South Africa. It was a lovely school, but he just didn't like going to chapel. And I didn't know that. And he's like, Mom, I just don't. And he's 6 or 7 and just like this whole God thing is, it's not for me. I don't think that people should believe in God so much and put so much faith in God. So we would have conversations about that. And he just didn't like going to chapel. So he found a way out of it. And he started doing violin lessons, which he found out were at the same time as chapel. So he said, I want to start playing the violin. And I said, okay. And then he said, the reason I want to do it is because I don't want to go to chapel. And I said, well, okay, if that's your motivation, that's fine.
And there's a lesson, too, that you don't always need to have the confrontation.
That's right. But there was a hill I would die on in the States when my kids went to a school when my kindergartner was learning about syllables and she had to write certain how many syllables were in words and they do the clapping for syllables. Mm-hmm. And she brought home a list of words and she took them back in and she got one marked wrong. And she said, Mum, this is wrong. You were wrong. And I said, I was not wrong, Willow. And I sourced about 3 or 4 YouTube videos and I sent them to the teacher because the hill I was would die on is how many syllables there are in the word island.
Right. Ireland. Yes.
Ireland. 3 in the south in the US. It's easy for me to say now with hindsight and with older kids about what you should and shouldn't do. But being in the heat of the moment, I do remember being very passionate about the syllables in Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look, do you know, I've conveniently forgot. I mean, I do remember having a really big giggle about going to like an international day where someone had drawn a map of Australia with New Zealand actually inside Australia, like it was inside the actual thing.
Like some lakes or something.
Like New Zealand. I was sort of having a giggle about that, but I'm Australian. I'm sure I wouldn't have seen humour maybe if I was a Kiwi. I wonder too, Nikki, I have not been one to be hugely involved at school in that regard. Do you know, I'm not, yes, I will make the fairy bread at International Day and, yes, I will decorate the door for Halloween, but I'm probably not the parent that is sitting there looking at the 20 spelling words saying, you know, are you sure you're doing this right or whatever. I think you have to have faith of what you're talking to your children about at home. Do you know that if my child had seen that video, that I would hope that there would have been a discussion. And obviously there was for the mum to know that the child had seen the video on the news.
Yeah, I think that she had come to talk to her about it.
Yeah. So I can understand you think.
But that opens the door to the discussion.
That's right. And you can't. I remember someone telling me because, you know, my youngest had been to 3 different schools by the time, like 3 different countries and 3 different education systems by the time she was in grade 3. So we'd had a little bit of British and a little bit of Canadian and a little bit of American. And I do remember a principal who became a friend saying to me once, every school on a macro level is great because they're all, you know, when we're talking about elementary schools and primary schools, because they're all genuinely trying to do the same thing, have happy kids drawing pretty pictures and learning how to count and read and going through the basics. And the fundamental thing, I think, with most elementary schools is how to be a good person. Do you know, like all about yeah. how are you going to be a good citizen? And I think definitely that, you know, all three of those systems, I can't talk about European, but I can definitely say that the Americans, the Canadians, the Brits, they all genuinely wanted the kids to learn how to be good people first and then good students second would be my thing. But I think so on a macro level, they all had it right. On a micro level, I could have picked the bits out of all of them for different things that I went, well, that's not how we'd do it, you know, the collective yeah. we, you know, that's not how I did it.
Yes.
But I think, yeah, you do have to have faith that you're having those dinner table conversations where you can say, oh, I'm not sure if that's how we would have done it or whatever. I mean, Nikki, just I know we've got to move on to the next few questions, but I think in that particular case where you maybe feel your own country is being, you know, maybe judged harshly.
Yeah.
That's yeah, right. And we have it with Australia where every time there's something comes with a stop the boats or a refugee or a Manus Island or anything, you know, people say your country is racist and, you know, you're that and you're immediately looking at your country from afar, you know, and maybe feeling embarrassed or prickly, you know, about what you've learnt or what you know to be true. And, you know, that's why as parents you sit down and you're constantly having those dinner conversations, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Kirsty, what have you got?
Okay, what have I got? I have got, Nikki, if you had to go back to Australia immediately, and I hope you don't because that means there's some emergency, but if you had to and you knew that you were going to be put in quarantine for 14 days, what would you pack in your suitcase to get you through those 14 days?
All the right chargers, I would hope, Kirsty, and the plug connectors because I couldn't survive without my electronics.
True.
all the charging stations.
Oh, maybe your microphone too, so you could do a podcast.
My microphone, of course. Something I want to do but have never done or never had the time, I was thinking maybe my wedding photos. I could pack in my suitcase to organise them into some sort of album situation. Mm-hmm. A yoga block because, you know, lockdown, a yoga block is very important to have for your yoga sessions. And pens and whiteboard markers to draw on the windows. So, yeah, you can
let me out.
And I don't really know. I'd like to say all the snacks, but I wouldn't be taking snacks from Germany to Australia. I'd be ordering in. I'd be having my Woolies deliver all my tasty snacks.
Yes. Now, the reason I asked it is I saw we have several women yes. that are in the hotel at the moment, several of them, all in the same hotel in Perth, which I find really funny that they're all like when they started to have a conversation in the Facebook group about ring me, I'm in 1706 or whatever. And I know that they are all talking to each other now. And I might actually give one of the women, Natalie, a call and have a quick chat and maybe we can throw it in the podcast next week. But I was thinking because, you know, it's a frame of mind too, isn't it? I know we have one member of the group who is absolutely miserable in there at the moment and she's not coping well at all and she's yeah. by herself and really just really did almost a cry for help in the group of I am finding this very, very hard. No balcony, just
yeah, no windows that open, yeah.
Yeah, no windows are open and also that feeling of what she'd said about how when they knock on the door to deliver you food, you have to sign something to say you will not open the door for 45 seconds because, as she said, so you open the door and you can just see someone running off in the distance to get away from you. I mean, it really is kind of that thing at primary school where you get cooties or germs and everybody, you're it, no one wants and everybody's to be near
running. It. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody wants to be near you or talk to you because you're nasty. So I was thinking if it was me, because obviously you and I don't have small children, Nikki, and I no. think all of our listeners out there with small children would be going, oh, I'm not going anywhere without without a window to open or whatever. So, yes, if I had all my children, I would have so much more luggage because it would be full of stuff to keep my children entertained. But if I went on my own, yeah, I think would this not be the perfect time for a project? I was with you, like with you saying your wedding photos, I was thinking I would sort out my 13,000 photos I have on my iPhone that just keep sitting there in the cloud. There would be no excuse for sitting there, delete, delete, sort, delete, sort. Okay, let's send that one off for the album for 2004. I mean, that would be the perfect thing to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so, because at some point you're going to get sick of watching TV. Like, if you like, it's all very nice to spend a weekend watching TV. You know, it's like lying on your bed and doing Netflix, getting up, pottering around, lying back down, just like dumping a whole series, you know, the whole thing. But for 14 days, you probably couldn't do that. You know, there's only so much Candy Crush. Never pay for lives on Candy Crush, Kirsty. There's always downtime because you have to wait for new lives. So, so there's all these sorts of things that you would just, I just don't think you could do stuff for 14 days. I just don't. I saw one guy go into quarantine somewhere. I wasn't sure exactly where it was. But he set up, he had this massive monitor that he'd had in his hand luggage and his gaming system, and he just basically sat down and just started gaming and pretty much did it. And I can't remember where it was, and I'm sure people are yelling at the podcast saying, I know where that was. And he was coming third in the world in some particular game because he just had all this time that he was like spending gaming.
Yeah. Did you see the woman who designed all the dresses and the outfits
out of the
lunch bags?
Yes. Yeah.
That was brilliant. And have you seen that they have their own Facebook group too now, the people in isolation, where they all talk to each other in their own.
Oh, yes. And every country has one. You know, someone said, oh, join the Singapore. Someone said, I'm going to Singapore and I'm going to be in quarantine. Oh, join the Singapore quarantine isolation group. You know, here's this group and here's that group. So you probably make some new friends as well, Kirsty. You know, there's all sorts of unknown opportunities in the ISO. All right, Kirsty, what's a common mistake first-time expats make, apart from what we discussed last week and leaving all your furniture in storage?
Yes, that would be my first thing, leaving anything in storage. And maybe overpacking, taking things a little bit too literally. You know, like when someone gives you a helpful hint of, you know, paper products are really hard to find, and so you arrive with, you know, a suitcase of A4 paper to print and envelopes and whatever, and your first day out you walk past a stationery shop and go, oh, probably didn't need to do that. But yeah, that would be my thing, is to overpack and to possibly be a little cautious about who they think they might be friends with and might not. Because for me, your first time as an expat will maybe be the first time that you sort of realize that you can have two friends that are vastly different age than you or in a vastly different life stage as you, and you will become great friends because you're not stuck in your usual, you know, social
silos and
so that would maybe be my advice. What do you reckon?
Yeah, no, that's a really good one about, and we have talked about friends before, but the whole thing about friends of totally different backgrounds, totally different age ranges that you really become really good friends with, that had you never left your life, would never have crossed your, not those people, but that situation would never have crossed your, probably your life, just where you are and what you're doing. So that is a great one, Kirsty. I would say to plan too much or not plan enough. So either be, okay, we're going and we need to, from the first weekend, we need to have something to do and then we need to do this and then the first school holidays are here and then we need to do this and then, you know, if you don't have kids, you're like, we're going to go here for this and here for that. And just be very rigid about before you go, like having this very big master plan about all the things you're going to do. And then on the other end, be like, oh, we'll just see how it goes. And then you're there for 6 months and you've done nothing because everything's too hard and you've just thought, oh, it's all too much. There's kind of a happy medium that you can do there, because one of the benefits of being an expat is the ability to see things when you're in a new location. So to see wherever you move to as a tourist, your immediate city, and then to sort of explore from there, etc. But I see people who come with like these massive plans about these are all the things and quite rigid and whatever, and then don't change, because when they get there, they find out that that location is actually not that great, but they have 100% committed to going, so they're going to go there.
Yeah.
You know, it could be something they've never heard about before that they want to go, and they're like, oh, we'll add that to year three because we don't have time in our 1 and 2 year time plan.
Right.
And then in year three, they're actually already moved somewhere else.
Yes. So yes. That's like me and Jordan. I keep saying I'm going to go to Jordan. And of course, that's one of the terrifying ideas in the back of my mind of if everything went wrong and I didn't get to go to Jordan, damn it. Okay, Nikki, I want the inside scoop from you. I know that you have someone living in your house that works in shipping. Are shipments going to take longer now because of COVID?
So this is interesting, because I said to someone the other day, not, and then they said, no, but I've been told they are. And so I went to the source and I said, what is going on? I thought shipping is it's proceeding as normal. And my industry insider told me that shipping is proceeding as normal. So ships are moving around and things are moving at exactly the same pace and in and out of ports. But the issue is, if a country has prioritized one industry over another, then there will be internal impacts that will impact the speed that something's moved. So if someone says, you know, I've been told that our shipment won't be there for an extra 3 months because it's not an essential industry. Now, shipping isn't an essential industry, and every country will use shipping as an essential industry. But it's about whether the removalists and that whole process, whether they're actually essential. So and obviously also there is some difficulty in moving, because in a lot of countries you come and have 15 people come to your house and pack in very close quarters, and there's a lot of sweat and all sorts of stuff going on in that time period. So if an industry is impacted by any sort of government regulations and opening more slowly, et cetera, number of people impacted, you mightn't be able to get a pack because they might only be sending two people at a time to be packers now. And so it's going to take three times as long to get to all the people that they would have normally got to in the same time period. So shipping, yes. Local requirements, can't speak for every country, but definitely if you can hijack a container, pack it, get it to the port, you're away.
So once your container's at the port, you're fine. It's just the bit at the beginning and the bit at the end where it's getting packed and unpacked. Right.
Gersie, favorite things. What are your favorite things?
My number one favorite thing is Hannah Gadsby's Douglas. I watched it a couple of nights ago with my daughter and laughed and laughed and laughed and just sat there being completely in awe of a brilliant mind. Anyone who saw Hannah Gadsby's Nanette, who enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed Nanette, might be thinking, oh, well, it's very hard to, you know, come back after Nanette. Well, this to me, Douglas, was just as good, if not better. Have you seen it, Nikki?
I haven't seen it, but interestingly, you should mention it, because I'm a big fan of Hannah Gadsby, and I use her, I'm always showing videos to my children. Come and watch this video of Hannah Gadsby being interviewed and all this kind of stuff as well, as we've seen Nanette. But so this week They did. I think they did a repeat on Fresh Air of a Hannah Gadsby interview with Terry Gross about Douglas and Nanette. I mean, it was after Douglas had been released, but I don't think it had been released on Netflix. But they said it seemed to be a repeat episode or something. Anyway, I hadn't heard it before, so I listened to it because I knew that Douglas was coming on Netflix. And it was awful. The interview was awful. Oh. I really struggled because I thought, you know, it is hard. I think it's hard, you know, to interview people. And then I thought about what about the interview didn't work for me? And it really was, that Terry Gross is a great interviewer, quite obviously. I mean, Fresh Air is fantastic. But I think there is an American way of talking and doing things.
Mm.
And I don't think that necessarily translates all the time.
Mm.
And I also think because, I don't know, I just felt awkward and difficult and I did not enjoy it. And I've seen loads of Hannah Gadsby interviews that I really did enjoy, but this one I was just like, oh no, it just felt all a bit wrong. But I'm very excited to see Douglas, so I'm glad that you saw it and enjoyed
it. That's a really interesting point, Nikki, because when you watch Douglas, the way that she does, she doesn't just come on and start doing her show. She comes on and begins by walking you through how the show is going to work, and it's almost like, because it's an American audience, right? And it's almost like she's explaining to them, this is what I'm going to say now, and this is why you can't get upset.
Yeah.
And this is how I'm going to do it then, and that's why that's funny. And this is what I'm going to do then, because she does speak in a very Australian way in her humor.
Yeah.
And also the fact that she's autistic. You have to understand her autism to sort of understand of, you know, where her mind's going and how she is. And she breaks it down for you. That's part of Douglas's brilliance too, is she explains to you how a autistic mind works in a conversation. And it's absolutely brilliant.
And I think that's maybe part of it that Terry Gross might have been missing. You know, she approached it maybe as interviewing a really impressive person as opposed to interviewing an autistic person, which was maybe because I've seen other interviews and I just didn't think that they were, I just didn't feel the same little bit of awkwardness that I felt with this. Anyway, if anyone else has heard the Terry Gross interview, I'd be really interested to hear your feedback because I just felt awkward for me a little bit. That's all.
The whole thing with awkward, Nikki, do you know, I think Hannah Gadsby looks awkward in her interviews. When you see her on television interviews, she looks awkward. She doesn't try and hide any awkwardness.
No,
and
that's it's
a beautiful thing because I think the more people do that, the more we will all be open to awkward. Do you know, I have been walking past, or a woman has been walking past our house with a dog for, you know, since we've been home in March. And then the other day, I walked past and I realized her hat was a segue, but not a segue, but a flashback maybe, of the wine label. You know, when I was drinking the wine on Friday?
Yes.
It was that same wine label on her hat. And then I had my, oh, I've met you moment. I know.
Yes.
I know who you are. Like, you live near here, da, 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 da. So the other day I was walking down the Esplanade and I saw, and I actually kind of almost jumped on her to say, hey, I've just worked out who you are, you know, the dog, the hat, the whatever. And she said in the most gorgeous way, I'm sorry, I'm so socially awkward. I don't know what to do in those situations, you know, whether to say, hello, it's me, you know, I met you, or whether to just let you go because maybe you don't want to talk. And I was thinking, you know, so often we don't say that to each other.
Yeah.
We don't say, I feel awkward, or that was uncomfortable for me, or
No.
Like kind of like when you go into Coles on Sunday morning and you see your friend Chris and you say, those potatoes you cooked last night were amazing. How did you do them? And he looks really awkward and says, that was celeriac.
No, but I know, because having a lot of things about emotions in our house lately. And so and saying what you really feel out loud. And the other day someone said, oh, do you want me to add you to this group or whatever? And I said, you know what? You should add me. I mightn't be a big participant, but when you ask me to do something, I'll be more likely to do it because I'll feel more involved because I've been in the group and I see what it is. And that's something you wouldn't normally say out loud, right? That's something you'd think.
Yeah.
And I said, sorry, that sounds...
That's very grown up.
I said, that sounds a bit weird. I said, but in our house, we're practicing saying, why are we thinking things? And so I'm just telling you why I'm thinking that. And then I thought, actually, it's quite valuable. There's nothing wrong with saying that. I wasn't rude. I was just explaining that if they added me to the group and I wasn't active, but then they asked me to do something, then I'd be more likely to do it because I felt responsible to this group of people that I'm a part of. So,
yes.
And that's all very true.
Yes. And culturally, we need to do that more because culturally so much gets lost. In your expat world, you need to voice it. You can't have two people from different cultures walking off going, well, I'm sure they understood what I'm thinking because
they don't. And that is why having my autistic child at an international school is always a goal of mine because everyone is a little bit different and there is a lot more little awkward moments. And I have always said that that environment is much better because everyone that, like, not everyone is vanilla, not everyone has come from the same cultural background with the same cultural references. So all people feel awkward at some stage when they're having interactions. And I've in that environment, and I've always felt that that is a little bit better for him to be in that environment because it's a little bit more forgiving, a bit more of a forgiving environment.
Yes.
Anyway, what are your other favorite things?
My other two favorite things is, Nikki, I haven't been walking with my Apple Watch on, so you wouldn't have seen this on Strava for the last couple of times because I don't think I've put my watch on since last week. I don't know. But I have been doing 10K walks now. I've gone past the 5K walks. I'm now a regular 10K walker, as are you, because you're doing your walks around the Ulster. But my aim is in October, I reckon I'm going to do a 26K walk. And I saw that there was an event, I think it's around October the 18th, and it kicks off in Harndorf, which is originally a German area up in the foothills of Adelaide. And you can follow the ancestry walk, I think it's called, of the German women that used to walk their products down into the city of Adelaide. You start off at Harndorf and you do this 26K walk and you follow the way they walked and what they did. So I'm going to put my hand up to do that. The minute I liked it and put it as my interested as going as an event, I saw that there's quite a few other people I know. So now I'm thinking, well, maybe because it's a National Trust event, which is like a heritage listing, here in Australia. And thinking, okay, I am going to do that and gather a group of friends. That's my aim for October. So I am loving the 10K walks because I now even have a little bit more purpose. So hopefully my 10K walks will now turn into 15K walks and then by October we'll be up to the 26.
No, it's like a marathon. You never have to go the distance. So a 15K walk will be plenty for you to do a 26 on one day.
Right.
If you're doing the training for that. So don't think you have to be walking. Don't let me put you off walking 26Ks a day. But if you do, it's like when you train for a marathon, like you run two short runs and one long run a week if you do like mini marathon training. So you do like an 8K run, two 8Ks runs and a 20K run. And then that's enough.
Well, right.
And for you to, and like that's towards the end of your training, you're doing
to
that. So, yeah. So, you don't have to be doing the whole distance all the time because you want your body to know, oh, this is extra. I've got to do this on the day. And then,
got it. Anyway, lovely.
What else?
And the other thing I started yesterday was a mindful month. Can you remember I was talking about Smiling Mind, the app?
Yes.
They've now had a challenge for the mindful month. So I started that, whereas in every day you do a piece of meditation and mindfulness. So I have joined in for that. So that's my other thing, is that I'm going to be far more mindful and meditative and stick to it for the month and do, you know, one a day. And it's easy peasy, right? Because you only need to do sort of 10 minutes in a day, but it's just a good thing to get into the habit of. Now, Nikki, what about you? What are you up to? What are you listening to? What are you doing?
Okay, so I want to talk to you quickly about, we've talked about Rabbit Hole, the podcast, and the PewDiePie and the interview. So I don't know whether you listened to the PewDiePie interview.
I did. I thought it was.
Which was a bit disappointing.
A bit blah. He sounded like he'd got older and was probably a little bit more retrospective about it all. But, yeah, he didn't tell them anything that they didn't already know.
I thought about your son saying it's a sellout, but there was no selling out because there was nothing that he said.
No.
Very blah and very vanilla, and I didn't really enjoy it. But at the end of that episode, when they previewed the next week's episode, I was like, oh, that's so good because I know what it's going to be next week. And so this week they just had the episode about Q, which I hope that wasn't the last one. I get a feeling they're going to do another one next week. But
I haven't listened to this week's episode yet. I've been saving it. And was that disappointing or did you love it?
I did enjoy it. I felt it fizzled out, and that's why I think that they're going to do another one next week. I just get the feeling that they haven't wrapped up that topic yet, so I'll see. But I really was feeling blah about the PewDiePie interview, and then they did the sort of the teaser. I was like, oh, it's going to be about Q. So to see, just the way they all bring it together, it's just so clever, the production that they do on how it all the bits come together. Now, last week I briefly mentioned a podcast that I was listening to about polling, and it's just a little bit boring and political, but I wanted to say, because it is a little bit interesting. So I listened to a podcast called 538. Now, it's an American podcast, and 538 is obviously 538 is a reference to the number of seats in the Electoral College, which is how the US chooses their president. And so Nate Silver and the 538 team talk about politics, and they track the issues and all the polling. There was one recently that was called One Virus in a World Full of Responses. And they actually talked about how COVID was dealt with in different political systems that were all dealing with the same challenge. So they had someone from who was a China watcher and someone from Europe. And, you know, you hear about polls a lot. So you hear about polls in Australia and, you know, they say preferred prime minister is this person at X percent or whatever. And you hear about, you know, this many people are going to do this and, you know, this many people support gay marriage in Australia, whatever. So you hear these polling things and you think, oh, okay, fair enough. And then you hear a lot about the US, but you don't always hear that much about other countries, I don't think, necessarily. And so I was quite interested to hear this episode and to particularly hear about how polling is done in China and how they actually get information about what public opinion is in China, because you can't, it's not, when you think about it, it's not really an encouraged viewpoint that you see externally. So it was just quite interesting to hear that. And then there's a Central European polling institute that sort of makes sure that all the polls across Europe are reviewed from the same point of view. And whatever. Anyway, I was fascinated by it. I just thought, you know, you mightn't be interested in polling necessarily or politics, but it was just interesting to hear how polling is done in different countries and how they come up with what the public thinks. You know, like how would you know that the public thinks the government's doing a good job or a bad job? You know, how would you know that about China? You know, necessarily. So anyway, I just thought it was an interesting
episode. Oh, I want to have a listen to that.
So I'll pop the link for that. And then my last one is, now I've been walking every day about 10Ks, depends. There's about 1K difference depending on how I go towards the lake and come back. So some days I can have a long walk and some days I can have a short walk. Anyway, I've run out of podcasts. So I've been listening to an audio book and it's getting a lot of buzz lately. And I thought, I did want to listen to her last one. So I thought I'll listen to this one first. It's by a woman called Curtis Sittenfeld, and she's written a book called Rodham, which is If Hillary Didn't Marry Bill. And so it's an alternative history and political novel about Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And it diverges from reality at the point where she chooses not to marry Bill Clinton. So very famously and very truthfully, apparently, Bill Clinton asked Hillary to marry him 3 times. And in this case, on the 3rd time, she said yes in real life. In the book, on the 3rd time, she says no and then goes off to live a separate life. And
I did not know that as a piece of information. Did he really ask her 3 times?
Yes, apparently. I believe that to be true. Anyway, so the thing is, so she's previously written a book called American Wife, which was also fictional, but all the names are fictional, but it pertained to the life of Laura Bush. And so it was a woman from the South who married a bit of a knockabout who was from a political family, whatever, and she ended up being the first lady. So, and then now she's written, and that got really great reviews. And I've always thought, oh, I must read that. Anyway, I never have, but now I have read this one, and it's quite weird because there's no changing of names. So everyone in it is a real person, a political operative, pretty much. They have an alternative history of presidents, obviously. So they go through this whole, because Bill Clinton never becomes president in 1992 in this book, because what happens is Bill Clinton ends up running against Hillary Rodham for the nomination of presidency in 2016. After she lost to Obama in 2008. So Obama is president in this book, but Bill Clinton was not president in 92, so it has different presidents between Bush and Obama.
Wow. Is there a Chelsea Clinton in this book?
There is no Chelsea. Bill has 2 children and neither of them are called Chelsea.
Right.
So he has 2 children with his first wife. So he leaves politics after he becomes the governor. And when he runs for president in 1992, he has the scandal. And the book turns in that he goes on the 60 Minutes interview to talk about having a long-term affair. And his wife is insipid and cries in the interview and everything, and it just basically kills his presidential campaign as the alternative to when Hillary was with him and she said different things. And it's got Hillary watching the interview with a friend talking about what the wife should have said to get through the interview. So it's just she really has thought about a lot of things. And then when Hillary loses the nomination to Barack Obama in 2008, someone says to her, you know, I always thought the US was more racist than it was sexist. And Hillary said, did you? Did you really? But, like, there's all these kind of little undertones and things that are just sort of come out as part of this whole process. And anyway, I'm 3/4 of the way through the book, so I haven't finished it. But I'm at the moment now where they are facing off against each other in the 2016 nomination process. And it's so fascinating because Bill Clinton is a very charismatic person. And when he doesn't win the nomination for the presidency, he goes to Silicon Valley and becomes a tech billionaire. And then he comes back and he holds all these rallies. And that's how he generates all this. So he is sort of like the Trump figure of the Democratic nomination process. So I'm not up to Republicans being involved yet, but it's fascinating and I am really, really enjoying it. Yeah. And I saw this morning that our friend Kelly from Singapore, hello Kelly, put up on her Instagram, you know, she gave it 4.5 stars out of 5, and she said the only reason she gives it 0.5 star down is because they used real names and she'd rather it all be fictional.
Right, okay.
Or fictional names. So, yeah, it's just fascinating, an alternative history, but that she still faces all the same things. She faces the sexism, she faces the fact that she's a bit nerdy and likes to talk about things in a different way than necessarily other women do. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I should finish it tonight.
That sounds good. That sounds really good. Okay, I'm going to have a listen to that. Well, or I might even read it. I'm still reading, or I just started reading Fleischman's Intro.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And I bought that for book group and before the world blew up, right, and we didn't have book group and it didn't happen. And so I'm actually just starting it and really interested, but I won't talk about it until I've sort of got a bit further on down the track. Okay.
Okay, yeah, no.
Nikki?
Okay, that's it.
You have to go to work. We're done. This is lovely. Thank you once again. It was so nice having a chat. And I'll talk to you Friday drinks.
See you then.
Bye.